Firstly, Julian Assange and the discussion around press freedom. Can Julian Assange really be called a journalist, a member of the press?
Right, it's a difficult question. I think a lot of the releases from WikiLeaks, which is the organization he co-founded, are really in the public interest. They've released information that really should be out there. But in terms of a journalistic storyteller, I think over time we've seen that there's been kind of some shortfalls in the way that they've built these narratives. If we think back to, I think it was 2011, when they released the collateral murder videos, really important footage of US forces killing 12 civilians, including two Reuters employees. So it really needed to be out in the public, and it was subsequently picked up by a lot of news organizations. But the video that WikiLeaks released themselves really had a lot of text. It was kind of a long, plodding, I think 18-minute video, and it kind of showed that WikiLeaks needs news organizations in order to function. So maybe it has a journalistic role, but it's not really made up of journalists themselves.
Mm. Now, as you say, that particular video, as much as the United States, members of the United States government at the time sort of cried foul that the video was seen released, I think undeniable to a lot of people, this was a video that needed to be seen. This was information that needed to be released into the public. But Assange has also faced a great deal of criticism releasing information that really didn't need to be released into the public. There was the cases in Saudi Arabia with gay males, some males that had been the victims of sex crimes themselves, which in Saudi Arabia, equally punishable by death. The release of a lot of private information in places like Turkey and I believe Pakistan as well. On civilians, there wasn't a real curation of the information released.
Again, that really speaks to the important role of journalists in being able to curate that kind of information. Journalists who have the background in ethics and also in kind of law and defamation as well, who are able to sort through those things. And I think maybe a better example of releasing those types of information was around the Panama Papers. Mm. So that big leak of a lot of actually financial malfeasance before going to the public was sorted through by dozens of news organizations. And so the information that we got had already gone through that vetting process.
Now, we know the one charge that that we have information on he's facing in the United States would relate back to the leaking of information in conjunction with Chelsea Manning. Now, this was a very famous whistleblower case, of course. But in terms of press freedom, what do you think the implications are for press freedom in that particular case?
Right, so Chelsea Manning has already done time for this. Yeah, I think that would be the easiest thing to prosecute, but I'm sure that Assange will be lined up with a whole array of different potential crimes. Mm. In terms of press freedom, I mean, the US has just been added to the list of the most dangerous countries for journalists. We already know that the US has prosecuted whistleblowers to the full extent of the law for many years. So in some ways, nothing has really changed here. In the US. In terms of Australia, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens next, but the kind of flippant way that the two main parties have addressed this issue is probably an indication that while Australian politicians are probably working on this in the background, we're not going to see any big claims made by them. No kind of they're not going to come out in support of freedom, press freedoms here. And in Australia, I guess the laws are a little bit different. The kind of whistleblower laws and the laws around journalistic freedom are kind of built into a whole bunch of different laws. So ones that relate to national security in particular, immigration, economics. So it's kind of difficult to, unless you're looking at the really specific cases, to think through what the implications are here as well.
Because we don't often think of the United States as some sort of hostile power, certainly not hostile to journalists within themselves. But if we were having this same discussion about a journalist being extradited to somewhere like Saudi Arabia following the Jamal Khashoggi case, this debate would take on a very different shape. But as you said just there, the United States has really bad implications for journalists right now.
It does, and I guess it speaks to just Australia's partnership with the US, that the major parties aren't willing to risk that relationship by taking a stance here.
Mm. And it was a curious statement by Prime Minister Scott Morrison, I felt, last week, that when an Australian gets banged up abroad, ends up in hot water, I think was his terminology, abroad, well, that's their problem. This is not really an attitude that most government figures would take in any other case.
Right, it's not a position that I think most embassies would take, or consulates overseas as well. This is a major role of diplomatic organisations, is to, you know, follow up these kind of cases and make sure that the law's being followed and that there's due diligence. Mm.
This is one, obviously, we were discussing a little bit off air, Ty, but you know, as I was saying to you, is this a difficult one for the media to kind of get their heads around, given most journalistic stories, most media stories tend to rely on conflict, two sides in a story, and the human mind just tends to shape, there's the good guys versus the bad guys. There's either Julian Assange as this messiah figure of press freedom fighting against the forces of conspiracy and darkness, or there is the government trying to do a good thing against a guy who has really overstepped his bounds and done a lot of wrong things. Is there a difficulty in actually wrapping our heads around this one?
Well, I think I've seen a bit of a split already in some of the Australian press. So the Murdoch press is pretty much focused in on him as an individual and painted him as somebody who's, with the release of information about what he was doing in the Ecuadorian embassy, trying to paint him as somebody who was kind of pretty out there and doing some strange stuff. Whereas the kind of press organizations, I think, have tried to delve in a little bit more into the issues here as well. But it is a difficult one. I think people have had a decade now to take sides on this.
And just perhaps as a final point, do we need to have a larger conversation about a journalistic and whistleblower ethics? Given right now, I mean, here in Australia, you talk about the Australian media, we see the shrinking of the Australian media, and certainly you see that same kind of shrinking abroad in the United States as well. Does there need to be a whole new slate on terms of ethics in journalism?
Well, that discussion has been taking place, especially in terms of immigration in Australia, and those two-year sentences for journalists who report on secret information around the asylum seekers. So that's been a big discussion. I think that question of ethics, I mean, it's raised in terms of those specific cases, but also because of the continually kind of blurring and changing lines between kind of amateur online bloggers, but also people leaking information, whistleblowers, and journalists as well. So that conversation about what ethics each of those roles have is really important.
Well, Ty, thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming in studio, having a bit of a chat with us about this one.
Thanks, Sean.
As Dr. Ty Nelson talking to us about the recent arrest of Julian Assange, the ousting from the Ecuadorian embassy and arrest by British police, and the larger implications for journalistic freedom and ethics.